We are on Sefer Alishah in Perek Sheni, in the chapter on Tefillah, introduction to Tefillah. In the essence of Tefillah, Rav Chaim, in his Chidushim on Rambam, writes there's two aspects of Kavana in Tefillah. There are Shnei Dinim in having intention when davening. The first intention one has to have when davening is Maaseh HaTfilah Shehi Amidah Lifnei Hashem. The first aspect is nothing to do with the words, nothing to do with the meaning. Could be any part of tefillah, it's irrelevant to that. Just the very recognition that you're in the presence of Hashem. That's point number one. That's one type of kavanah. And the second one is Kavanah Shel Perush Hamidas. The words, what you're saying now, what you're thinking during this word you're saying now. This is actually a very, very good time. This time of the history, to give an example of what this means. I've usually given in the past an example of the Holocaust, but Dafa Corona is a very, very good example of this. When people have a conversation, they always have the conversation and they have an awareness of the context that they're having that conversation in. So if you've just had a big family simcha, and you're in the middle of the family simcha, then you'll talk with someone about something, but it's all in the context of being in a family simcha. That's what's happening to you right now. If we're in a time period of corona, then everything that people are going to speak about, where are you going for Shabbos, where are you going to be for Sukkos, like all the questions that a person will potentially think of or speak about, are all with the backdrop of there's corona going on. Why are we sitting behind plastic? Like everything that you speak about, and even if you try and talk about a different topic, everything is tainted by, or affected by, or coloured by the fact that we're in the middle of corona right now. As that would be during the Holocaust, and that would also be the context of everything that's going on. So, if someone has personally had a very challenging situation that just happened to them, they just lost money, or they just found out that someone who's close to them is sick, then everything that they'll be speaking about with someone else will be clouded or tainted by that context that they're right now in. When a Jew comes to daven, not only when it comes to davening, the truth is this is true for any action that a Jew does, but it's especially true, it's a chiyuv during davening, and there's two things happening. There's one which is the words that he's saying, and if he's in a section which is hoda'ah, then he's thinking about hoda'ah. And if he's in a section in bakashah, he's requesting, then he's thinking about requesting. He has the details of what the words are and the translations, but that's one thing. But there's something else which is more broad and more important, which is the context that he's in. And that's a primary kavanah. The primary kavanah before you think about the words is the context of the fact that you're standing before Hashem. And just like if you were talking with a friend and you would be light-hearted, joking and having fun in your conversation, but then some elderly, stately gentleman would walk in and then you would like refine your speech and your jokes that you were making, but in the context of that new person who just walked in the room, because it's just, you know, a different style, but you're in a different context now. So being aware of the fact that you're in the presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu is the primary intention that you have in davening. And that's irrelevant to what you say. Now, I'll tell you a funny story. When I was, must have been about 9, we came to Israel for Pesach. And we were staying in a place called Gimzu. If anyone knows what that is, name of the inn. And we were having Seder, or Shabbos Cholamod, I remember, I think Shabbos Cholamod, at a family who didn't speak English. And we didn't really speak Hebrew. And we were having a great challenge in conversing all the way through the Shabbos. And at one point, the wife said to even probably my father, or maybe me, I remember, they said to us, "But how do you pray?" She couldn't understand, like, she was so bothered by the fact that we couldn't speak Hebrew. And then she said, "So how do you pray?" So I think my father said something like, "Well, we say the words, but we just don't know what we're saying. We know how to pray. We know all the words. We can read them. We know how to pronounce them. We just don't know what we're saying." And she looked at us with a look that was like, "You are crazy. What are you thinking? Why would you talk if you don't know what you're saying?" And I remember thinking at that time, I have to learn Hebrew. I have to learn Hebrew. This cannot go on. This can't go on. It took me a good 10 years until that was realized. But it's actually crazy. Like, what are people who don't speak Hebrew doing when they're davening? They're not thinking of the Perush HaMilim if they don't know what the words are. Unless they're praying. You're allowed to pray in another language. The Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to pray in another language. You can pray in a language that you understand. But for those who stick to Hebrew, which you're allowed to do as well, even without understanding, what are you doing? What exactly are you doing? You're not doing the second kavanah, which is Perush HaMilim. You can do the first kavanah, which is the main kavanah, which is the awareness that you're standing before Hashem. And sometimes that awareness that you're coming for Hashem is so powerful that it overrides the details of, I don't know what that word is, I don't know what that word is. Don't get stuck on those things. I'm aware that I'm in the presence of Hashem. Once happened that Rabbi Aaron Kotler came to America and he wanted to found a Beis Medrash community. And it wasn't clear that he was going to get permission to do that because in those times, and even today, America, there's a work ethic which is very great, and the idea of taking people who are able to go and work off to learn endlessly didn't seem like it was a value that America was going to give approval or grants for. So he didn't speak English at that time, and he came with an American rabbi who was the go-between to go and speak to some minister to get approval, to get grants to found this Beis Medrash. And he said to the translator, the go-between, he said, say that we want a Beis Medrash to learn Torah. So then the guy says, that's not going to go. So he says to himself, he says, they want to found a rabbinic seminary that will train rabbis to serve communities. And he saw that the person was like accepting and listening and nodding, but Aaron Kotler felt like that wasn't his, he didn't know what the words were. He didn't understand what was just said, but he just saw that that was not the message he was saying. So then he pushed the guy aside, I don't know, physically, but he like set his aside, and he just started talking in Yiddish to the non-Jewish American. And he started like saying, and it's so much more powerful in Yiddish, even if you don't understand a word. And he started like getting very, very enthusiastic and energetic and even forceful in his speaking about his dream of founding a yeshiva and making America a makom Torah, and he went on and on and on and on. And the guy was like looking at this rabbi, not having a clue what was being said. But then when obviously the American rabbi was very uncomfortable and awkward, like, well, how is he going to go and translate this all? And he's pushing it. And when he finished, when Rabbi Aaron Kotler finished, and the American rabbi came to like give his piece, then the non-Jewish minister said, don't worry, I didn't understand a word he said, but I totally got the message. And he gave approval based on that. He gave approval based on a non-understood Yiddish phrase that was said, of the enthusiasm that was said over. Meaning sometimes it's irrelevant that you don't understand the words. You're very aware of the presence of who you're standing before, and that says much more than the details of the words. When you come to Daven, you're doing two separate things. One, which is a less primary one, a secondary one, is the details of the words of what you're saying. But the primary one, which actually takes place a moment before you start davening, is the consciousness, awareness that you're coming to stand before Hashem. If it ever happens, you come late for mincha. The halacha is that you're allowed to skip Ashrei and go straight into Shemona Esrei. And it's preferable halachically to make up Ashrei afterwards, because the Gemara says that one of the entry points to Olam Haba is someone says Ashrei three times a day. However, I'm recommending that you don't. I'm not saying you should say all of Ashrei. But if you go straight into Shemona Esrei, it's very unlikely that you'll be able to be in the context of standing before Hashem. You'll probably be in the context of, I just want to make sure I keep up. And you just go into it. In a good case scenario, you'll be thinking about what the words mean as you go through. That's a good case scenario. But the ideal of the awareness that I'm standing before Hashem is likely to be lost. The way that you acquire that, Chazal tell us in the Gemara Brachos, is through Shihiyah, where you pause before davening, just to bring yourself to the awareness that you're standing before Hashem. Now, I don't recommend doing it for a full hour, not only because your chavrusa will be annoyed with you, but also because, from experience, people who pause too long, then they don't think about Hashem. They start thinking about all sorts of other things. The mind gets distracted. But there's definitely a few seconds, more than 3-4, which is just a bridge to not thinking anything. And I wouldn't go all the way to 25-30 seconds, because that's already distracting. But somewhere between 5 and 15 seconds, which is short enough that you can remain focused, but long enough that you can do something with your thought, where you bring yourself to the awareness that you're standing before Hashem. Just that concept that I'm standing before Hashem. One thing that's helpful to do it, if you wish to, and it can be very helpful, is to use the imagery of standing in the Beis HaMikdash. If you've ever seen a picture of the Beis HaMikdash or even a 3D video of the Beis HaMikdash, then you can use that imagery of you standing in the Ezros Nashim, or if you want to really go far, you can go all the way to the Kohen Gadol and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Ideally, you should do it all the stages as you work your way through. So we'll speak about this another time. But you're supposed to work. Have I spoken about this before? You see, you're nodding when I was looking at. Have I given this topic before? There's a whole. You can divide up davening into different stages, and each stage parallels a different section of the Beis HaMikdash. And the ideal is that you imagine yourself in different stages of your walking through the Beis HaMikdash as you walk through, finalizing with Kodesh Kodashim Shmona Esrei. If we ever have a chance to, I would love to give that talk. It's called Structure of Tefillah. I would love to give that talk as well. But either way, that concept of having the awareness that you're standing before Hashem, you can use the Beis HaMikdash as an imagery. And that's the primary thing. If you don't understand a word you say all the way through davening, but you had the awareness that you were standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you fulfilled the kiyum of what the Rav Chaim writes in his commentary on the Rambam, of the first kavanah, which he calls Maiseh HaTfilah, the action of davening. The goal of davening is the awareness that you're standing before Hashem. And then there's a secondary one of Kavanah Shel Perish HaMilos. Maiseh HaTfilah Hu La'amod Lifnei Hashem Mavil Ma'od Yelid Bar Mitzvah Kvar Nitchayev Mitzvah Nora Hazu. This obligation already applies to someone age 13. Yelid bar mitzvah kar chayav litlamed keitzad omdim lifnei Hashem. Doesn't mean to say that a 13-year-old is able to get that full awareness of the fact that he's standing before Hashem, but it does mean that he's obligated to stop. There are certain mitzvahs which are very finite mitzvahs. You've shaken the lulav and etrog, you've finished. There are certain mitzvahs which are infinite mitzvahs, like love of Hashem, or kavanah and davening, which there's no clear point where you can say, okay, I've done it now, I'm exempt until tomorrow. Love of Hashem is something which you constantly build and constantly grow. So how do you fulfill it? The way you fulfill it is with the capability that you have now, you do as much as you can do. And then as you grow, then your capability will grow, and then you continue fulfilling the mitzvah on a higher level. So a bar mitzvah boy who's obligated to be aware that he's standing before Hashem, his ability will be limited to what he knows, and the imagery he's able to conjure up, and the maturity level that he has. But it's an obligation already from that stage. How he should be standing. Meaning the awareness, like we gave that example before, that if you're joking with a friend, and then afterwards someone stately walks in, you change your pose, you change your mindset, because you're aware that you're in the presence of someone honorable, and therefore you change who you are, your whole being changes, your whole status changes. So when you come to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your status changes. The way you stand changes, not because the halacha says you have to stand straight when you're davening, but because you're aware you're standing before Hashem. In fact, when you go to the Rambam, Hilchos Tefillah, and he writes all the pose that a person should be in, it shouldn't go the way around that I really would rather slouch, but if it says that in the Rambam, then I'll do that. Rather, it should go around that I'm aware I'm standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How could you not stand in that way? Maybe you're just not aware of an honorable way to stand. So this is the guidelines of how to do it, but it should be a natural coming out of the awareness that you're standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You'll be aware of that concept. Eichel HaGeshet, the idea of taking three steps forward. The whole purpose of taking three steps forward, as far as our experience is concerned, is I'm aware I'm now coming to stand before HaKadosh. And you can use that as an imagery. I'm taking my three steps forward, I'm bringing myself to be in the presence of Hashem. And therefore do those steps slowly. Don't just like step forward and start saying the words. Rather it should be a process. I move away in order to bring myself in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and use that imagery when I'm standing before Hashem. That's the primary imagery which you think of when you're saying the pasuk, Hashem Sifatai Tiftach. I'm aware that I'm speaking to you. I'm aware without the energy, the fat, the force, the koach that you give me, I'm not able to speak. Ufia gitratecha. With that, you energizing me, you giving me the power, I'm now able to speak praise to you, Hashem. But I'm only doing it because I'm in front of you and you give me the koach, the ability to do that. Hikon likrat elokecha Yisrael. That's the pasuk in Tanakh, which is quoted in the Gemara in Shabbos, which obligates us to prepare for davening. You have to prepare yourself before you come and stand before Hashem. So the earlier generations, and if anyone has the time to read this, it's pretty lofty. You think you're reading something Kabbalistic, and then you realize you're reading the Rish. But the in Brochos, in the fifth parak of Brochos, which speaks about Kavana and Davening, it writes there this phrase, which is pretty out of this world. I don't know if it's relevant for our generation, but for those people who are able to get close to it, I don't mean close to it meaning you're 60%, but just to be in the awareness of it, just to have the awareness of this concept, it's a very helpful tool in davening. Dorot HaRishonim Higiyu B'Shad HaTefillah LaMadrega HaKrova LeNevuah V'Hitpashtut HaGashmiut. Let's just try and explain that for a second. It's very helpful if you can do it in davening. Man is broadly, much more complicated than this, man is broadly made up of the place of joining, the compound of the body and the soul. You're not just your body. You're not just your soul. You in this world are the place of the body and the soul joined. You are always acted upon and encouraged by and influenced by those two forces working on you the whole time. Sometimes they work well in harmony. Sometimes they fight. Davening is a time where, in a sense, you divide between them. You, in a sense, leave your body there and you relate to the more spiritual side of yourself. You try and say, if I didn't have my bodily desires or my bodily needs and I was able just to elevate myself up and just think on a more spiritual term, who would I be? What would my desires be? What's my spiritual goals? And you go to an ideal. Yom Kippur is a day where you're entirely there. You're not even giving the body its physical needs. It's a full day of that. Purim is a day which equates to Yom Kippur and balances it out, where you come to lose your das and you become just physical, and you see if your physical aspect is also serving Hashem. And those 2 days work in harmony. Purim and Yom Kippur. One is a day just of the soul, one is a day just of the body. Usually you're the compound of the two working together. During davening there is a concept where you're supposed to imagine your neshama leaving your body. This isn't something which is healthy for the day-to-day. Day-to-day you have to be using both together and functioning both in harmony. You're not into disconnected. But during davening, there is a concept of that, where you leave your body there in place, you see your body as the tool that you use in the world in order to function and do mitzvahs and to connect to the world. But right now in davening, just like when you sleep, your neshama goes up to Hashem, and just the neshama is free, not bound by the body. So that's in sleep. So too in davening, there's a concept of that. It's not relevant for many people, but it is a high level of davening, where a person, in a sense, sees his neshama relating to Hashem directly, without the mechitza, the boundaries of the body. And people who were able to meditate before davening, this is what the Rif writes, the Rabbeinu Yonah on the Rif, commentating on what the Shehiyah was, what were they doing for an hour when they were getting ready to daven, what was the process of what they were doing during that time. It was the enabling to see themselves just as a soul and relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu without any boundaries of the body getting in the way. Just to relate to Hashem in a pure, unfiltered, unadulterated way. And that's a level. Va'anu, ki'im ledargot ke'ele lo nagia. That level is above us. Gam anu mit'alim bli gvul b'shat tefillah. We can still use that concept to recognize, I'm not bound by my body, I don't have to be bound by my body. I don't have to spend davening thinking, what's going to be for lunch? And I hope I get there all. Now now you don't have an issue with that, actually. But shachris you do. Shachris is brilliant. The other ones are davening before meals. But shachris, you don't have to think, what day is today? What are they selling for breakfast? I have to go to my room today. You don't have to think that during davening. You could rise above that. And although your body will be there, loyal and devoted, waiting for you when you come back down, and he'll be faithful to serve you as you continue your day, but during davening, it's time to elevate and rise above it. Just to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a pure manner. That's a concept which, whilst being lofty, is valuable. And that ties into what we were speaking about, your standing before Hashem. Your standing before Hashem means, I'm just relating to your Kadosh Baruch Hu directly now without all the more base desires that get in the way. Hamashkia avoda v'simat lev b'tfirato einu zakuk od l'ra'ayot al emuna hamitlamed l'amod lifnei Hashem b'tfirato b'rabot ha'itim yimtza b'ribo yediya v'da'it lifnei mihu amed. It was once I don't know if it's a true story or it's a fable, but I like it very much and the message is definitely true. There was a Jew who was doing Kiruv in Gan Saka in Yerushalayim. And in Gan Saka, in a park there, there's an area which is more foresty and there's an area which is more open and green. And there was a non-religious family who were having a picnic, and this Kiruv worker came up to a novice Kiruv worker, not someone who had much skills and didn't know how to do it very well. He came up to this family and started engaging them in conversation, to prove to them about the existence of God. And he had his four proofs all like ready, and he's going to work them through stage by stage, and he pulled an unwitting and unwilling participant to prove to them that God exists. And so they start fighting it out. God does, he doesn't, I'll prove to you, let's hear your proof. And obviously when someone's not interested or open to hear, then they're obviously going to find any far-fetched proof to disprove it. So after back and forth, and they were getting quite loud, decibel volumes were rising, then a Breslov Chassid came out of the forest, and he hears them fighting back and forth, and he says, Chevre, Chevre, what are you arguing about? What's the big fight? So the non-religious one says to the Breslov Chassid, he says, he's trying to prove to me there's a God. And then he says, you're religious, come help me out. Like, let's prove he's a God. And the Breslov looks at them and says, you're trying to prove there's a God? I was just talking to him for the last half an hour over there in the forest. I love that story. When you try and analytically, God exists, he doesn't exist, the whole discussion is pushing you away from Hashem. Because when you're in the place of suffix, and the place of like, I need to prove the existence, build a relationship with him, you're by definition outside. When you don't get involved in the discussion of proving, not proving, but you just see, if he's out there, let me see if I can develop a relationship with him. What you then develop is something very real and authentic. If you prove God, then what have you got? What have you got? You've got an intellectual, archaic proof that there was once someone who created the world. Very nice. So what is that going to do with me? Why is that relevant? How do I have any relationship? When you, I'm not saying that a person should blindly develop a relationship with Baruch Hu without any basis. There is a very strong value in a person proving beyond a reasonable doubt that it's logical to worth investing a relationship in. That, there's a value in that, tremendous value in that. Because otherwise a person will develop a relationship and then suddenly be full of doubts afterwards. So there's definitely room to do that. But that's not the goal of proving he exists. I once had an argument, I didn't want it, but it was forced upon me, with someone who said to me, okay, let's talk if God exists. I really didn't want to go there. I'm not involved in that so much. He says, but you're in yeshiva, what do you do all day? I said, yeah, all day we try and prove if God exists or not. It doesn't go there. We're past that point and we're discussing a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and developing it. I have the ability to prove it, but I don't like doing it, because when I do that, then it brings me back to a place of uncomfortableness. Of I don't have the relationship, and let me try and prove it. I can do it, I'm happy to do it, and we did do it a little bit, and we came to a fair place in our discussion, but it's uncomfortable to do it. For me, it's uncomfortable because I've done that, I've been through that, I've proven it to myself, and now I've developed a relationship which is uncomfortable to say. If someone would come to you and say to you, prove you exist, prove it. So you just feel uncomfortable with the whole topic. But if I prove to you that I do, then who am I? And like, if I can prove that, and what if I don't exist? Oh my God, what's going to be then? What's going to happen then? You're so comfortable with who you are, you've done the relationship so clearly that it's uncomfortable to discuss the topic of I exist or don't exist. You've gone beyond that point. Part of davening is the awareness that you're standing before Hashem. That true awareness that you're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you develop a relationship with Him. It's beyond the point of intellectual proving back and forth. And you develop a pure, sincere relationship. So back to where we started, there's two purposes in davening, two points of kavana, a secondary kavana for the words mean, it's important to invest in that as well, but a primary one is the idea of context. Who am I standing before? And the way that you do that is by pausing before davening, bring yourself for momentarily, a few seconds, an awareness that I'm standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then from that awareness that you're standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can then enter the conversation and develop a relationship with Him. Shakur.